Georgia with Fillmore Street. This is FieldPod.com, the week in Georgia, in English, coming to you from sunny San Francisco, California. Today is Thursday, the 16th of February, 2017. On this date in 1918, Lithuania declares independence from both Russia and Germany. At the time, Lithuania was legally part of Russia, but occupied by the German Empire. German authorities made it illegal to print or distribute copies of the Independence Act. Today, the 16th of February, is celebrated as Lithuania's Independence Day. 1923, the archaeologist Howard Carter opens up the tomb of Pharaoh Tutankhamun. 1933, the American experiment with alcohol prohibition formally ends with the passage of the Blaine Act, which repeals the 18th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which made illegal the production, transportation, and sale of alcohol. 1936, the Popular Front wins parliamentary elections in Spain by a narrow margin. There, a coalition of left-wing parties, including the Spanish Socialist Party, Communist Party, Marxist Workers' Party, Republican Left Party, and Republican Union Party. In July of that year, General Francisco Franco, supported by a number of right-wing opposition parties, and eventually the help of the Nazis and Mussolini in Italy, launches a Spanish civil war against the Popular Front government. The war lasts until 1939, when the fascists conquer Madrid. On this date, 1959, Fidel Castro becomes the premier of Cuba after his group of guerrillas overthrow the government of Batista. He becomes president in 1976 before retiring in 2008 and passing away last year. 1985, Hezbollah, or Army of God, is founded. Today is George F. Kennan's birthday, who coincidentally shared a birthday with his father, George Kennan, himself a notable American writer, who traveled extensively and wrote a lot about and loved Georgia. I'm your host, Mark Mullen. The podcast was written by Joe Larson. You want to comment on the forum or ask a question, go to tpeelpod.com or send us an email at tpeelpod, T-P-E-L-P-O-D, at gmail.com. Archpriest Gheorghe Mamaladze was arrested at Tbilisi International Airport on Monday while in possession of cyanide. He was accused of planning to use the poison to kill another high-ranking priest. According to Chief Prosecutor Irakli Shotadze, the arrest came after a citizen came forward and told the authorities that Mamaladze had asked for his help in getting the cyanide so he could use it to poison another priest who hasn't been publicly identified. The prosecutor's office started investigating on the 2nd of February, more than 1 week before the arrest. According to official reports, the whistleblower refused to help him, so he got the cyanide somewhere else, which the authorities are still trying to figure out. He is being investigated for attempted murder and illegal possession of a firearm, crimes that could get him up to 15 years in prison. Mamaladze wanted to get the cyanide before departing for Berlin to visit Patriarch Ilya II. That has led many to speculate that he had planned to poison Ilya, but that has not been confirmed. However, Prime Minister Kvitikashvili, who is very religious himself, sent Anzor Chubinidze, the head of the Special State Protection Service, to Berlin for Ilya's personal protection. No other suspects have been identified in the case. Mamaladze is powerful within the church, heading the, property management service. He also served as the director general of the church's St. Joachim and St. Anne Medical Center, and had regular access to Ilya and other members of his inner circle. He denied the accusations and has invoked his right to remain silent under questioning. He also told Ombudsman Uche Nanuashvili that his case does not involve any high-ranking clergy members. After these initial facts were reported, the story got a lot more complicated. Rustaviori published a letter addressed to Ilya, which was allegedly written by Mamaladze. In the letter, Mamaladze raises a number of issues and irregularities involving the church's finances, including graft, corruption, and illegal alcohol production. The unverified letter has fed suspicion that Mamaladze was framed by people within the church who didn't want him to get that information to Ilya. This view was expressed by Metropolitan Petre Tsava in an interview with Rustaviori. A lot of speculation involves Ilya's secretary, Shorena Tetrashvili, with Tsava saying that she could be behind the frame-up. He has in the past referred to her as the Grey Cardinal and called her the most powerful figure in the church. She hasn't responded to the accusations. The church is powerful in Georgia, controls enormous finances, is extremely corrupt, and the patriarch is not so young. National Movement launched a protest campaign on the 10th of February in support of media freedom and to demand what they consider to be justice in the ongoing Rustavioti ownership dispute. On the 13th of February, they protested in front of the Tbilisi City Hall. 13 demonstrators were arrested for trying to force their way into the building. The protesters are inspired by recent allegations that two Supreme Court judges, Besarion Arvaladze and Pata Katamadze, have been pressured to rule a certain way in the case, although it isn't known for certain who applied that pressure. Rustavioti director Nika Gvaramia believes the judges are being pressured by the state security service to rule against the TV channel. Those claims haven't been substantiated, but they've been echoed by the national movement and its supporters. Gvaramia appeared at Tbilisi City Court on Thursday to answer questions about a recorded conversation he had with former city court head Mamuka Ahlediani. In the recording, Ahlediani criticizes the current head of the Supreme Court, Nino Gvenetadze. Gvaramia verified the recording is real, but said that it doesn't tell the whole story about the conversation. The national movement also accused the government of bribing Natalia Nazgaidze, who chaired the three-judge panel at the Tbilisi Court of Appeals that ruled last year against Rustavioti's current ownership. Nazgaidze's family recently received a plot of land and a 1 million lari payout from the government. The government says the money was paid as compensation for a land plot owned by Nazgaidze's brother that was damaged in the flooding in 2015. The national movement says it was money paid to the judge in return for ruling against Rustavioti. The national movement in this case is correct. I mean, find me somebody else who has had flood-damaged property in Georgia and gotten a million lari from the government. The court seems to be very close on a Rustavioti decision. As we've heard, it is a ridiculous case relating to the ownership of Rustavioti, and is purely for the government to just shut down Rustavioti because they find it frustrating, and who can blame them? But it will be very, very bad for the government of Georgia if they use the courts in order to shut down that television station. First of all, because the courts are so much better now than they were under the national movement, and everybody knows what they will be doing if the decision actually is against Rustavioti. In travel to and from Georgia, Georgian Foreign Minister Mikhail Janelidze wrapped up his visit to Washington earlier this week, where he met with U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, whose only previous job is working for ExxonMobil and who is very close with Vladimir Putin, like all of Trump's cronies. During the meeting, Tillerson expressed full support for Georgia's territorial integrity and sovereignty, for whatever that's worth. Janelidze also met with Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev this week during an official visit. They agreed to deepen cooperation on the Southern Gas Corridor project. Secretary General of the Gulf Cooperation Council, or GCC, Dr. Abdellatif bin Rashid Al-Zayani, was in Georgia this week to meet with the President, Prime Minister, Foreign Minister, and Parliamentary Speaker Irakli Kobakhidze. Janelidze and Al-Zayani signed a memorandum of understanding. Defense Minister Levon Izorio was in Brussels this week for the NATO-Georgia Commission. He met with the defense ministers of several NATO member countries, as well as NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. Prime Minister Kvitakashvili went to Berlin to visit Patriarch Ilya after the patriarch survived an apparent poisoning attempt and underwent successful surgery, all in the same week. Georgia's ombudsman, Ucha Nanuashvili, issued a special report on the 9th of February calling on the government to revise the law on occupied territory, something which Otsneba has stated that it intends to do. In particular, Nanuashvili called on the government to decriminalize entry into Abkhazia and South Ossetia from areas other than Georgian-controlled territory, which currently can be punished with up to 2 years in prison. He says the government should issue special permits to certain travelers if they're visit to the occupied territory serves Georgia's state interests, peaceful resolution of the conflict, deoccupation of the territories, or humanitarian purposes. Since the law was implemented in 2009, 395 people have been prosecuted for illegally entering the occupied territories. 51 were imprisoned. The rest were fined. According to the Ombudsman report, most of those border violations were caused by a lack of information on entry procedures rather than any ill intent. He pointed to the fact that application forms and the list of required documents for getting special entrance permits are available neither on the Foreign Ministry website nor on the website of the State Security Service, which issues the permits. Only 10 people have received permits over the past 2 years, Amending this law is a very good idea. The original law was vindictive, probably from Temur Yakubashvili's era, and very poorly thought through. So good job, Ucha. President announced he's launching nationwide discussions on the development of a new national security strategy, something that he first called for at the new parliament's inaugural session back in November. He said the country is facing new challenges and needs a new security strategy, especially due to the shifting security environment in the Black Sea region. However, Georgia's priorities would remain the same: national sovereignty, territorial integrity, freedom, stability, and Euro-Atlantic integration. The plan is to update the existing security document, then develop a comprehensive strategy through discussions with public officials and civil society representatives. The initiative will be spearheaded by the National Security Council's Secretariat, which is chaired by the president and led by his old friend, Dato Rakvashvili. Compulsory military service went into effect this week as the Georgian Armed Forces welcomed its first new group of conscripts since the compulsory service was abolished in June 2016 by then-Defense Minister Tineco Khidashely. The practice was reinstated late last year by the new defense minister, Levan Izoria. The new conscripts will face a slightly changed format. They'll be paid $21 per month instead of the former three, and they'll spend 3 months in full-time training before starting a nine-month period where they'll get some weekends off. Tbilisi City Court sentenced Boris Chagunava to a six-year conditional prison sentence for his role in the 4th of October 2016 car bombing that targeted National Movement Member of Parliament Givi Targamadze. He was arrested shortly after the incident, and his conviction is for illegal possession of firearms and explosives in connection with the bombing. He pled guilty to the charges. The conditional sentence means that he won't serve any actual prison time. Chagunava's brother-in-law, Darcho Khechuashvili, was charged in absentia with attempted murder. Strange it was such a light sentence. U.S. government condemned South Ossetia's plans to hold a referendum on renaming the region to the Republic of South Ossetia, the state of Alania, which will coincide with the presidential elections on the 9th of April, 2017. The U.S. Embassy issued a statement saying that no referendum held on the territory is legitimate unless it has the consent of Tbilisi. There was a shooting in Vaki on Wednesday night on Shatbatashvili Street. Someone fired several shots into a BMW. One person was injured, according to an unofficial source cited by Interpress News. The victim is a representative of Georgia's Interpol Bureau. A bus carrying Russian tourists was attacked in the town of Gagra in Abkhazia on Wednesday. Several people threw stones at the bus, smashing windows and injuring several people, including a small child. Tourists were moved to another bus and, according to news reports, were attacked again. Georgian court of first instance fined the U.S. tobacco producer Philip Morris 92 million lari, according to reports by Kommersant. According to the report, Philip Morris was found guilty of violating unfair competition and dumping laws. When contacted by Kommersant, the company said it plans to appeal. Philip Morris had a 23% market share in 2015. Employees at the bookstore chain Biblus posted a video online complaining about poor working conditions. In the video, workers complained that they're paid only 300 lari a month to work 60 hours per week. The company denied the allegations, saying that employees only have to work 8 hours a day and that they get overtime if they work any more than that. The case comes after workers at Fresco and Rustavi Azot chemical plant launched protest movements of their own earlier this month. The central bank reported that remittances to Georgia amounted to $83.9 million in January 2017, a 26% increase from January 2016. 89% of the remittances came from the 10 largest source countries, which were led by Russia, Italy, U.S., Greece, Turkey, and Israel, in that order. Rustavi Metallurgical Plant, which is Georgia's largest industrial enterprise, will export seamless pipes to the EU for the first time later this year. They'll ship 2,000 pipes total to Italy, Germany, Poland, Bulgaria, and Hungary, in addition to the company's traditional markets in Russia, Azerbaijan, and Kazakhstan. All in all, they expect to export 25,000 pipes during 2017, many of which are used in constructing oil pipelines. Good job, Rustavi Metallurgical Plant. Wizz Air is launching direct flights between Kutaisi and London's Luton Airport. Flights will start on the 8th of June and depart every Thursday and Sunday. According to the Wizz Air website, one-way tickets to London are currently going for about 250 lari each. In addition to making it easier for Georgians to get to Britain, it's expected to be a positive sign for the tourism market. Fly Dubai is launching direct flights between Dubai and Batumi starting on the 22nd of June. Flights will be Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturdays. Will continue through the end of September. Georgian olives and olive oil will be in retail stores in April, according to Georgi Svanidze, director of Geolive, a domestic producer. They harvested olives in December and are currently processing them to produce oil, according to Svanidze. They plan to sell 40 tons of olive oil as well as black and green olives. The company owns a 50-hectare plantation in Kakheti. The French furniture brand Gautier opened a showroom on Agma Shenabeli Avenue in Tbilisi. Five Georgian films are being screened at the Berlinale Film Festival this week, which wraps up on Friday. The films are My Happy Family by Nana Evkimishvili and Simon Gross, Hostages by Rezo Giganeishvili, City of the Sun by Rati Onelli, God of Happiness by Dito Tsintsadze, and the animated short Lile by Natia Nikolaishvili. Georgia is also one of the five countries selected to participate in a special national session where its filmmakers will present their expertise and experience. In parliamentary news, Parliament endorsed Henri Okhanashvili, a new member of Parliament from Otsneba's party list. Okhanashvili replaces Manana Kobakhidze, who left to become the Constitutional Court judge after being confirmed last week. Georgian Parliamentary Human Rights and Civil Integration Committee approved a set of amendments to the imprisonment code, which are aimed at improving prison conditions. The amendments were proposed by the Ministry of Corrections, and if implemented, would allow female inmates with young children to spend weekends at home under certain circumstances. The amendments would also allow certain inmates to have TVs and radios in their cells, enable inmates to earn a bachelor's degree while in prison, something that currently is not possible. Overall, the emphasis on resocialization rather than isolation, and that is a very, very important thing. The amendments will be discussed by other parliamentary committees before going to a plenary vote for final approval. Next plenary session is in March. The meme this week is a message from the country of Georgia to U.S. President Donald Trump. Georgia makes its case for why it should be second in the world after the U.S. Huge towers, no walls, but mountains the country did not pay for, and the ability to drink wine like real men, among lots of other things. It is very creative and hilarious. The Ombudsman released its special report on the rights of women and children in Georgia's conflict-affected regions, covering 2014-16. Main problems highlighted are domestic abuse, early marriage, access to abortion, child poverty, and the right to education in one's native language. Predictably, the situation is pretty bad, especially in Abkhazia and South Ossetia, but they find a few positive trends. Coda Story has a two-part video series on national identity in Georgia, which focuses on the competing narratives put out by the Patriots Alliance and the national movement and its allies, including Tamar Chergolaishvili, Giga Bokeri's wife. One narrative focuses on Irma Inashvili and her linking of Georgianness to conservative values such as opposition to same-sex marriage. The other narrative focuses on Chergolaishvili, who links Georgian national identity and independence to ties with Europe and the rejection of Russian influence. The Kremlin these days is encouraging ethno-nationalism everywhere, in the U.S. and in Georgia and anywhere they can, but particularly enthusiastically in what they consider their near abroad, because Russia works hard to create weak states rather than strong ones. Writing for the Daily Beast, Will Cathcart covers the Georgian Orthodox Church scandal. He dives into a letter published by Rustaviotti and allegedly written by Archpriest Mumladze to Ilya II, where the priests alert him to graft corruption and illegal alcohol production on the part of clergy members. The letter's validity hasn't been verified, but it has led many people to speculate Mamaladze is being framed by clergy members who don't want Ilya to know about their activities. Liz Fuller writes for Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, about controversy surrounding the public broadcaster, especially plans to shut down most of its programming for the next 11 months while it implements reforms, I say with air quotes. The new director general is Vasiko Makhlaparidze, who has longstanding professional ties to Bidzina and in general is a guy who does what he's told for a modest price. The broadcaster has a legal obligation to cover political developments, but it will mostly shut down during the debate over constitutional amendments and the run-up to local elections this fall. That said, most observers agree that the broadcaster was wasting a lot of money and major reforms were needed. Closing and the reforms do not need to be simultaneous at all. They have different ideas behind that. Social Science in the Caucasus looks at the use of antidepressants and antibiotics without a prescription. According to NDICRC data, 1 in 4 adults reported taking either antidepressants or antibiotics without a doctor's prescription during the year prior to the survey. Women are more likely to report having done so, especially rural women. From the age group 35 to 55, those people were most likely to use antidepressants and antibiotics without a prescription. STRAT-4 covers bilateral trade between Russia and Georgia, which is expected to intensify due to an agreement reached between Special Envoy to Russia Zura Abashidze and Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister Dmitry Karasin. The deal will make it easier for goods to pass through Abkhazia and South Ossetia. Monica Elena writes for Eurasianet about attempts to preserve Georgia's alphabet in the digital age, where devices are used, usually designed to use only Latin alphabets. She quotes Nino Doborginidze, head of linguistics at Ilia State University, which she thinks the pace of technological change does threaten the Georgian language, although it's in no danger of dying out. For example, a lot of Georgian language data, such as books, manuscripts, and oral records, have a hard time spreading internationally because of the alphabet. Georgian Journal has a good explainer on Kvanchkara, Georgia's most famous wine. I'm not sure if it's Georgia's most famous wine, but I don't know, maybe. Stalin evidently liked it. They interviewed Dr. David Magradze of the National Wine Agency, who explains where and how Kvanchkara is made. It's a pretty tiny village, and it's actually in Racha, not in Kakheti. If you haven't tried it, do so, particularly if you have a sweet tooth. Writing for OC Media, Luca Pertaya analyzes the recent string of left-wing protest movements that have sprung up in Tbilisi and elsewhere around the country. He asks whether these disparate movements could come together and form a coherent political force, something the left hasn't been able to do at any point since Georgia became independent. As if there's a left anymore, anyway. The Heritage Foundation publishes its 2017 Index of Economic Freedom. Georgia is ranked number 13, just behind the UK and Estonia, and just ahead of Luxembourg, Netherlands, and Lithuania. It got improvement marks for property rights protection, business freedom, labor market flexibility, while its rating declined on taxes and government spending, while fiscal health remained stable. As you may know, the Heritage Foundation is a completely ridiculous and not at all authoritative entity that does very sloppy work on policy, but the improvement is mirrored by the Transparency International CPI, as well as by the much more authoritative Freedom House. All this stuff to read is posted on our forum. This week's dive bar number is 152,839, the population of Batumi, according to Geostat. That makes Batumi the 11th largest city on the Black Sea coast, just after Burgas in Bulgaria. Tbilisi-based writer and poet Lynn Coffin is putting on a two-part poetry workshop on the 19th and 26th of February. Each session is from 3 to 6 p.m. and will take place at Nata Bwachidze's art studio, located at number 61 Belinsky Street in Tatsminda. Costs $50 for both sessions. There's only space for 8 to 10 students. If interested, contact Mary Ellen Chatwin at EnglishMakesSense@gmail.com. From the British Georgian Society, author and trade unionist Eric Lee will give a talk about his upcoming book, The Georgian Democratic Republic of 1918 to 1921. The talk is on the 22nd of February at the Georgian Embassy in London, starting at 6:30 p.m. The American Language Center announces they're putting on an elementary pre-intermediate Georgian course starting in late February. The start date is flexible. It depends on enrollment. Covers 32 hours of class time and costs 400 lari. Students are expected to already have some basic Georgian language skills. For more information, send an email to alclimacharlie.tbilisi@gmail.com. Georgia and Germany face off this Sunday at the 2017 Rugby Europe Championship, a tournament that Georgia won in 2015 and 16. Competitors are Georgia, Spain, Germany, Romania, Russia, and Belgium. The Georgian-Germany match will take place in Rustavi starting at 11 a.m. Tbilisi time. Go Lelos. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. That's Tango, X-Ray, Tango, Bravo, Uniform, Kilo. Our email is tbilpod@gmail.com or post to the forum on our website, www.tbilpod.com. And we will finish with, from 1975, from London, this is Foghat with Slow Ride.
Yeah.